Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. It is Monday evening, January 23rd, a little after 9 p.m. Eastern. It's time for the Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by a cast of millions here. Now, joined by David Dorman and John Tytel up top. Right below me, we have John Stalica. To his side, it's David Griggs and Joey Fortson. We've got a lot to get to from a busy week and a busy weekend in college basketball. I guess, should we get right into things here?
I think so. The big question, and we'll discuss this, Alabama or Purdue? What is the right answer?
I think that's really a question we're going to debate really good on Thursday night when we do a bracket rundown show.
Yeah.
But it is a big question. Who should be the number one team in the nation right now following Houston's loss? But we're going to get to all of that. But as we've been doing the last few weeks, I think we should start off with another one of our favorite things here, another blind resume.
Oh, I love these.
And I'm going to be pulling it up right here in a second here. And then we go with a couple of good teams this week. And I don't know that there's really an answer to this, but let me start at Dorman. Let me start with you. Take a look at these two profiles. Is there one you like better than the other?
Ooh, I don't like the non-conference strength of schedule on the right. Wow, this is tight.
Chad is getting tricky. This is a tricky one.
I could go with the same two choices. It really,
I'm almost
guys.
Signing I'm the one on the right. I'll be quiet. This is a good one.
I'm leaning left. I'll take the team on the left, Chad.
You will take the team on the left, Joby. Do you agree with him?
Ooh, you know what? This is just tough because this both you know you have road wins, you have neutral wins. I mean,
I know them both.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go with the team on the left because of that non-conference strength of schedule. That was a good point. But that's it. Too. I mean,
Chad,
I could change my mind in a heartbeat. Tennessee on the left? I think maybe.
Can I make a comment? And I'm not going to give it away. I would go with the team on the left, but I am going with the team on the right simply to further the point that I'm almost certain you're trying to make here. I'm taking the team on the right. No, actually, you know what? The team on the left is somebody that I think everybody would say is better, but the team on the right is better on the court. And I think when they play,
I don't think the team on the right.
Yeah, these two teams.
I don't think the team
on
the right is a team.
These teams are playing in a week.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I brought this up. Actually, Joby, good point. Joby, you want to tell us everyone who these two teams are?
I think it's the Rick Barnes special because I think I recognize. I think the one on the left's Tennessee, but I go, who's the one on the right? Oh, yeah, that's probably Texas.
Okay. You know what? And I really thought I'd sell you all on Texas having the better resume, and I didn't do it. Tytel, you know, were you with them all on the left, just over Texas on the right there?
So it wasn't St. Mary's and Gonzaga after all.
I think it's a coin flip. Obviously, the JNG has them neck and neck. I have them both as two seeds. I suppose that as an Arizona fan, I want Tennessee ranked as high as possible because that makes our win over them look better. But I have no problem with either of these being ranked above or below because they're both so great.
Yeah, I figured we'd just start things off in the absolutely amazing Big 12 conference, a conference that right now, as we sit here on January 23rd, Looks like it has a serious shot at six protected seeds, which has never happened before. Five has out of a conference, six has never happened. But if you look just at the polls here, they are six teams among the top 17 teams in the nation. And that is absolutely amazing. And Joby, why don't we start off with the Texas Longhorns? I know you want to get a few thoughts on them.
I am in shock at how well Texas is playing. As John put, I think they are a clear two seed. I've seen some, you know, the voters and some people putting them down in what would be a three seed land. I think that's crazy talk. I don't care who's coaching them right now. This team has put together a ridiculously strong resume that, you know, screams two seed. And look at where they are in the Big 12, the Big 12, the best conference as far as depth in the country. They have a shot at taking, you know, the regular season title. You know, I mean, yes, Kansas State's in the lead right now, but don't tell me Texas could not do it. Their new facility is awesome. You know, give them credit. I mean, I thought at some point, you know, the, you know, the It would, they'd turn into a, you know, the carriage would turn into a pumpkin for these guys after the Beard departure, but it hasn't happened. And I think enough time's gone by to where it probably won't happen. And this is a legitimate right now two seed. And I'll be very surprised if they don't remain a protected seed by the end of the year.
Stalica, the other big story in the Big 12 of the past week, though, it's actually was the Kansas Jayhawks going 0-2, and which almost never happens for Kansas, including absolutely getting manhandled by TCU on their home court.
It's rare enough that Kansas actually loses at Kansas State. And as you pointed out, getting quickly into a 10 to 15 point hole at home against a TCU is even more rare. It looked like they were going to make their eventual second half run when they were down, I think only about 10 or 11 at halftime. But thing is, TCU, they never panicked and they actually expanded their lead, I think as much as 25 or 26. And
yeah,
it was a complete blowout, reminiscent of the Kentucky game last year for Kansas.
Yeah, this is this just something Kansas does late January, early February every year now? Because I remember last year when Kentucky blew them off the court, and it was just like, oh my God, I've never seen anything so amazing. Like, what an impressive performance. And Kansas still ended up okay. Kentucky was my pick to win it all last year going into the NCAA tournament. They came up about six rounds short. But is this just sort of a bad day for Kansas, and do you shrug it off, or is this indicative of TCU just being amazing and maybe they can win it all? Like, it is harder to win at Kansas than it is to beat Kansas in the Final Four. I you know, that's an obvious observation. And TCU didn't just do it. They blew them to the freaking moon.
You know what? I want to see how Kansas responds, in fact, from this. And as we record this, Kansas has that shot, Tytel. They're in Baylor with an early lead. But I know you had a few thoughts on the Bears, in fact, coming off of their 2-0 week with a pair of road games.
Yeah, a roller coaster for them so far in conference play. Lost three in a row to start, have now won four in a row, including three on the road, all by 7 points or less. So they're playing with fire, tied with TCU for fifth place in the league. I have them as a four seed, but they have a huge game as we speak with the defending champs in town. Then they take the rest of the week off, and then Arkansas comes to Waco on Saturday for the Big 12 SEC Challenge. Junior shooting guard LJ Cryer, he only made 1 of 8 from behind the arc during the three-game losing streak, but he has straightened things out. 9 of 14 during the four-game winning streak. And if they can get Jonathan Chumwa-Chachua back from his ACL tear last February, we're going on a year now, they're a legit threat to win the conference tourney, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's one other team that below these top six, Dorman, that's worth a few minutes of discussion here. Also coming off a 2-0 week, Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma, then they knock off Iowa State on Saturday. Are the Cowboys suddenly have some life here in this conference?
They definitely have some life. They started out really weak, but here they come all of a sudden. I was ready to count them out, but as I did my bracket today, they were just barely on the outside looking in. They got a crazy stretch coming up here. They're going to Texas, then they're going to Oklahoma. In there, they have a SEC Ole Miss for the showdown. These next three games are really big. If they can split even in Texas and Oklahoma, in Oklahoma, I know isn't the greatest win, but it's going to do a lot. The bedlam in Norman is huge. I think it would do them wonders. Then they get TCU at home. I think Oklahoma State is definitely a player and will be in the tournament in a few weeks.
My question, I mean, the Pokes were a team I really liked coming into the year. They kind of were underwhelming out of conference, but they're starting to hit their stride now. This is my issue with Oklahoma State and a little bit with West Virginia too, is that I think it's clear that they are top 40 caliber teams. It's just that they're playing 12 games against protected seeds. And if you're a top 40 team playing a top 16 team 12 times, you might lose 11 out of 12. And are you, those wins don't set you back in and of themselves individually, but if you're not getting wins against anybody, the committee's not going to take you.
You look at both these teams, 11-8 overall, and losing conference records. Of West Virginia case, 1-6. Tytel, can you put teams in? Can you see the committee taking teams in that are that far below 500 in conference and that close to 500 overall?
you can finish five games below 500 in this conference, but your wins better be against the top of the conference. Yes. In the middle of the conference. I mean, look at the schedule. It's like a bunch of top 20 teams, top 25 teams.
The schedule is ridiculous. I guess West Virginia's got the good news. They get Texas Tech twice still, who seems to be the only team anybody could beat in this league.
Yeah, it's just that, like, if Okie State and West Virginia were in literally any other league where they're just not overmatched 12 times out of the year, like if they were in the Pac-12, I think they get the wins they need. And I know, like, losing to a protected seed doesn't set you back. The problem isn't that they're losing to protected seeds so much as that they're not beating anyone.
Well, and that's the point is you're not getting into the tournament if your overall record is 500 or below. I mean, and so if all of a sudden you find yourself in the Big 12 at 6-12 and like Oklahoma State didn't perform out of conference to the level win-loss that you really needed to, you're not making the tournament even with – if those six wins include a couple of protected seeds.
Here's the upcoming schedule. We got Kansas Baylor, great matchup as we record this. Tomorrow night, guess what? Another great game, Kansas State at Iowa State. We even discussed the Cyclones.
There's a high-stakes game for Oklahoma State at Texas.
At Texas. Yeah. And then, by the way, coming up on Saturday, not only is it SEC Big 12 Challenge Week, but some of the most intriguing SEC Big 12 Challenge games I think we've ever seen here, between having Kansas at Kentucky, Texas at Tennessee, where we started the show, Iowa State at Missouri, TCU with a road test at Mississippi State, Arkansas at Baylor, Alabama on the road test at Oklahoma, Auburn's at West Virginia. There is some darn good games in this SEC Big 12 Challenge this year.
Yes, I would like to call an audible. I would like Alabama to play Kansas and Oklahoma to play Kentucky. Who do I need to call?
I don't know. You have to work on that one.
Okay. What about our friend Lee Delvecchio?
Yeah. And then Monday night, Baylor right back at it in Texas and Austin is a fantastic game. That should be unbelievable.
And that's what this Big 12 is about this year. It is just, even when you get to go out of conference with the SEC Big 12 Challenge, most of these teams are getting crushed.
Think about what Texas's next 7 days are. They play that Oklahoma State team who is fighting and playing extremely well, then go to Knoxville and then have to host Baylor. My goodness.
But look at these matchups. I mean, the challenge, other than Alabama, Oklahoma, is the SEC going to win any of them?
I think the SEC's got a good shot here. Well, let's take a look. Let's jump right over to the SEC right now. Here, Dorman, let me start with you over in the SEC, where Kentucky, who's going to be playing Kansas in the challenge, they had another 2-0 week. They keep finding ways to win games.
They do. They keep fighting along. Tshiebwe is finding his groove. He's absolute monster on the boards. And I feel this Kentucky team is getting more confidence by the day. Their coach is really behind him. He hasn't gone crazy on him yet. I think he knows what he has. As it gets deeper and deeper into February, he's going to be pushing all the buttons. I look for this Kentucky team to be in really good form coming in March. But I think they're live, Griggs, coming into this game at home this weekend against the Big 12. I don't think Kansas is any lock to win in Rupp on Saturday.
I would want to throw another team up here, Tytel. The Auburn Tigers only beat LSU and South Carolina this week, but there were a pair of road games, and they're just starting to pile up wins here.
Everybody here loves road wins, don't they? So Auburn started the new year with a double-digit loss on the road at Georgia, bounced back to win five in a row, tied with the Vols, one game behind Alabama at the top of the conference standings. I have them as a 5 seed. They host A&M on Wednesday, then they head to West Virginia for the Big 12 SEC on Saturday. The bad news, 30% shooting from behind the arc is among the worst in the nation. Good news, they only allowed 25% from behind the arc, number 2 in the nation. And I thought that Morehead State transfer Jani Broome might have been hitting the wall. He had a pair of single-digit scoring efforts against Mississippi State and LSU. Good news, he had his best game of the year in the road win at South Carolina Saturday, 27 points, 12 of 17 shooting, 11 rebounds, and only one turnover.
Stalika, Texas A&M, I know they lost to Kentucky, but they're still sitting here at 5-1 overall. Is this, I don't know that anybody's calling this team in, but how close is this team to being a tournament team at this point?
I think the saving grace for Texas A&M right here is they're at least beating most of the teams they're supposed to beat right here. They really could have used the win at Kentucky to at least try to get a decent road win against a team that's going to be in the field right here. They're still going to have chances when they go to Auburn and Arkansas within the next couple weeks, and even Missouri is going to offer a winnable game against a potential tournament team right here, but they're also going to have to hold serve against teams like Vanderbilt and Georgia right here. They're one of the few teams that's not going to be getting a Big 12 game right here.
Yeah, there's four teams that won't, and they'll be playing Vanderbilt, two of the teams that don't. Joby, another team that might be, I don't know, you wanted to talk a little about the Florida Gators? Do you think there's anything here? Joby, you're on mute.
Starting to sneak up. They have two wins of recent that are notable, and they've won four of their last five. They beat a Missouri team that's in the field right now, and they beat a Mississippi State team on the road that they're competing with the Bubble Four. Do they need to do more to make it? Yes, but they're all of a sudden starting to creep into the conversation, and that's important not just for the Florida Gators, but a team that we will be talking about out of Conference USA. That team needs Florida to be a reasonable, in a high, at least high NIT level team if they want to get a seed that isn't double digits. And right now, the Gators for the last five games have delivered. And the Gators, just as a note, do have South Carolina this week. They should take care of business at home against them. And then it's called opportunity time. Against
what Kansas a stretch State. The next four after that. Well, it's not just at Kansas State. They filed that.
Yeah,
that
then Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama.
At Kentucky, at Alabama. These next four games are as tough as anybody South the nation's going to play.
If they beat South Carolina and then can get two, maybe even just one, but two of the next four, they're in the field of two of the next four.
If they get two of the next four
protected seeds, they're playing, or three protected seeds and one team they are battling for a spot with that is playing, as mentioned earlier, in Kentucky, much better.
I agree they're playing better, Joby. I certainly agree that if they get two of the next four, they're in the field. But that almost feels like saying that if, you know, Ole Miss wins the conference tournament, they're in the field. Yeah, they would be, but that is a road stretch of unbelievable difficulty. I mean, those are four protected seeds and three of them are on the road. I just don't think they got it in them.
They probably don't, but the Owls of Florida Atlantic will be definitively rooting for them as they go.
Yeah. Here is the upcoming schedule. I think we've discussed most of the games already because of the SEC Big 12 challenge. But Griggs, before we move on here, I know you wanted to do the Alabama versus Purdue debate. Alabama, of course, the best team in the SEC so far. The question is, are they the best team in the nation? Both polls said they're the second best.
Yeah, and the polls would. And I, if I were guessing the committee, I would have them behind Purdue. My own personal thought is that Alabama is better. You could argue that maybe their resume isn't as good. They have two losses versus one. I think the games that they lost were to better teams than Purdue's loss. And really, it's just an issue with me of they're not just winning on the road. They're winning on the road against tournament caliber teams, and they're blowing their doors off. They have the win against Houston, but it is so much more than that. They blew out Arkansas. They blew out Missouri. Like, Mississippi State's not bad. They never had to sweat. And one of the things I notice is that when Alabama plays, I'm normally changing the station a lot sooner than when Purdue is. Purdue had to sweat out Maryland at home. Alabama went to Missouri and blew them to the moon. And I guess that's the difference. I test, but everything else, like, they're just beating good teams away from home by a lot.
I'm not going to argue with that. You're there. We'll see. They got Mississippi State, then at Oklahoma this week here. But let's kind of go to the other half. Let's go over to the Big Ten Conference, where Purdue is the new number one team in the nation after Houston's loss, which we'll get to in a bit. They completely crushed Minnesota on the road. Like you said, they did struggle at home with Maryland. Beyond that, interestingly enough, Stalico, we don't have another top 25 team in either one of the polls in the Big Ten after Purdue, after Rutgers drops off out following their loss this week at Michigan State.
Rutgers is just out of the polls right here, and Indiana is also on the doorstep of getting back in. Keep in mind, the Hoosiers also had a big win at Illinois and also got a nice home win against Michigan State. You probably could have argued the Hoosiers should have cracked the top 25 again this week.
Oh, yeah. Tytel, you have some thoughts on them as well, right?
Who's had a better 10-day stretch than the Hoosiers? They started 1-4 in conference play. Then they had the 19-point home win over Whiskey, the 15-point win at Illinois, and the 13-point home win over the Sparty. I have them as an 8 seed, and they have what should be a road cupcake at Minnesota on Wednesday. Then they finished the regular season with 11 straight games against top 60 teams. Senior point guard Xavier Johnson still out after having foot surgery last month. Good news, teammate Race Thompson did return on Sunday after missing 4 games with a knee injury.
As far as the rest of the conference, we could spend an hour going through each of these teams, but I want to pile a few of them here at Dorman, maybe starting with Illinois. I know they're a team that you were not that high on when you did a bracket earlier today, and I guess is it just because of the way they're playing recently?
Yeah, they're so up and down to me. They look good, then they look awful, then they look clueless, then they look like the best team in the country. Something is off with this Illinois team. I can't exactly figure it out, but they're just way too inconsistent for my liking. But the next two games is going to be real rough. They got Ohio State at home and then in Wisconsin. They've already beat Wisconsin at home in a tough battle, so that's going to be a rough spot there. Illinois, they have a lot of this stretch of the schedule is very opportunistic, because after that it's Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, Rutgers. They got some chances to start piling up wins and moving up the bracket.
And Griggs, I pulled up Ohio State on the right there next to them. This is a team that was heading absolutely in the right direction, but kind of redeemed themselves a bit, even though it was at home, but they took by taking care of Iowa over the weekend.
Yeah, well, I thought they were heading in the right direction. They'd lost 5 in a row, and that's the direction I kind of like for them to be going in, personally. But, you know, because of our own flight. But, yeah, and I was kind of surprised that they really needed a win, and they got it, and they looked good doing it. So, you know, is Chris Holtmann getting things turned around? I'm still a little underwhelmed by this profile overall. Not that there isn't good things on it. You know, the win against – at Northwestern is really good, and I think even though it was a home win, the win against Iowa is great, but certainly one that they needed. But is this enough to land them inside the bubble? I think that they still have work.
Well, look, these next two games at Illinois, at Indiana this week, yeah. I mean, huge for this Ohio State.
Oh, it's huge.
They got to get one of these two games.
I think they absolutely have to get one. If they lose both of them, you're looking at 11-10. You're looking at just one true road win, and that's good enough for the NIT.
Now, 11-10, 3-7 in conference, I don't think you're going anywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe not even the Big 12, especially definitely down the Big 10. Right. Joby, on the left there, I got up the Northwestern Wildcats coming off the win tonight at home of Wisconsin.
Who did win 2 in a row against Illinois and Indiana?
Yep.
Well, wait a minute. It's Northwestern, and one of those being on the road, along with Michigan State on the road. Oh, my gosh. I mean, and, of course, tonight, beating Wisconsin. I mean, at home, but still, that is what tournament teams are supposed to do. This is a tournament team, which that if you look at brackets across the country, a unanimous 11, except I have them as now a 10. So this team, Northwestern, who has been to the tournament, you know, a paltry number of what? They're at one
time.
I think that, hey, there's a lot of the season to go. You know, are you a believer or not? But right now, if the tournament selection were today, they would be in. When you talk about Ohio State, you know, there's a logjam for teams like Ohio State. They're going to have to beat out Northwestern. They did beat them on the court, but they have lost games that Northwestern has done. So Northwestern, right now, Northwestern sits in the field along with other Big Ten teams that are fighting for position, jockeying like Maryland, Penn State, et cetera.
Yeah, Penn State, another team, I think, you know, Dorman, this is a team that looks to be squarely on the bubble right now. As it's a huge game at Rutgers coming up tomorrow night.
You said it, Chad. Huge game. This is an opportunity they really need. They really need to start piling up some wins. And as we've
they could take their wins sometime else. Oh, really. Okay.
But the Big Ten is brutal and it's hard to pick up wins. So they need this one bad.
Yeah, that is the.
Are you sure this isn't a classic A-10 matchup between Penn State and Rutgers right here?
The old A-10 Penn State Rutgers. We got Ohio State, Illinois, also Tuesday night. We got Wisconsin, Maryland Wednesday, Purdue with a road test at Michigan. Iowa's at Michigan State. We've got a lot of good games here going right into the weekend with Michigan State at Purdue coming up here on Sunday. Rutgers at Iowa, Ohio State, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin. A lot of games worth circling. But let's jump over to the Big East Conference here.
I love this conference. I'm just excited that we're jumping to the Big East.
Okay. Stalika, right. I got to start with you. It happened last Wednesday night. I'll let you vent your frustrations, whatever it is. Your Xavier Musketeers go to DePaul and lose.
I think if we're talking about the week right here, there is an actual defeat and there is also a moral defeat when you consider how they followed up against Georgetown. One of the troubling trends for Xavier, if you look at their past four games, the opposing team's best player has been having like a huge first half, racking up close to 20 points. Rather, it's going to be Shireman for Creighton, Kolick for Marquette, Gibson for DePaul, and Primo Spears. Look what he did. He was a three-pointer away from hitting 40 points against Xavier, so there's a reason why Sean Miller kept referring to the team's defense or lack thereof during the postgame conference, in part because it was Georgetown, but part of it is because he knows the next three games are going to be absolutely brutal here when they go to UConn, they go to Creighton, and after that they host a little team called Providence in the CentOS Center right here. So there was definitely one trap they got caught in, and now we'll see if they really are going to stay in first place in the Big East, because honestly, I think Marquette has a bit of an inside track right now.
Yeah, Marquette. Great. Yeah, Griggs, this Marquette awesome. Team had a great week with a pair of wins here, and that was a very impressive looking profile. Although they don't have that top level road win, but they've got a couple chances for it still out
there. Yeah, they still got a few chances for it. And I want to say they won six of their last seven or seven of their last eight or whatever it is. And the only loss in that stretch was a very close. Was it even an overtime game or it was just a really close game at Xavier, who was the conference leader at the time? So when you look at what they have left, yeah, they have some. The game at Xavier may have been their hardest remaining game and they almost won it. I'm not saying they're going to win out, but I'm saying that they could come close to it. And Marquette, yeah, they don't have the big road win yet, but I think that it might be on the way. And even if they don't get it at UConn, if they can beat DePaul and Creighton and Butler, that's still a damn good profile. And this is a very dangerous team going into March the way they're playing now.
They better win the game at Georgetown too, by the way.
Yeah. But yeah, if they lose that one, they're eliminated.
What about one of the teams that they beat this week, Tytel? They beat Seton Hall this week after Seton Hall picked up the huge win over UConn.
Well, I was going to do 10 seconds on my trip to DePaul Georgetown tomorrow, but it's literally not worth 10 seconds of our lives.
It's not.
They lost four of their first five. They were all the top 30 teams, and they won four in a row, including the huge home win over UConn. But as you said, they got blown out at home by Marquette on Saturday, so 5-5 in conference play. Their schedule was front-loaded, so six of their final 10 are against teams outside the top 65. So chances to pick up wins. Probably not going to win the regular season title. But if you're wondering whether Shaheen Holloway is a good coach in March, let me remind you that he won eight in a row last March with St. Peter's before losing to the Tar Heels in the Elite Eight. I have them as about a 19 seed right now.
That's only a few lines off out of the field, right?
Yeah. But what do you think, Ty? I mean, they had won four in a row, and I know that they got blown out at home by Marquette, but are the chances there for them to get inside the bubble the way they had been playing at least before yesterday?
Sure. I don't know if they can win the rematch at UConn on February 18th, but look at all those games outside the top 50, 60, 70. They have a chance to win 20 this season. And then they'll need to do something special, I think, in the conference tournament. Okay. So that's why they're a 19 seed.
Okay. 19 seed.
Joby, one of the most head-scratching teams all season has been the Creighton Blue Jays. They've now picked up a couple of wins, which they needed because you need wins on your resume. But how about where they stand right
now? This is sort of what we were talking about with Oklahoma State, except that Creighton came in with huge, high expectations. Now, Creighton, and I defer to Tytel on the committee's impact on this, the Kalkenbrenner missing all those games is a deal. Is they have an excuse for, you know, their slumber, shall we say, that they took in the month of December. But the but now they've started to steady the ship. They beat Providence, who is a solid wearing white team. And the key one might have been getting the road win at Butler. They did not have a road win before that. It's not that Butler's a world beater, but they've proven now that combined with their neutral court wins over Arkansas and Texas Tech, not as impressive as we thought they were at the time. But the team starting to pile up is starting to be the team that that folks anticipated they would be. Are they going to make it, you know, to the top four seed lines? Of course not. But they are apparently looking in the right direction, and facing Stalika's team this weekend is going to be a huge, huge determiner for where the rest of their season is going to go, assuming they beat Johnny's midweek.
And I would say, if you look at the schedule, their four toughest road games in conference are going to be at UConn, at Marquette, at Xavier, at Providence. Three of those four are past them right now. From the front loaded schedule, they could be, you know, they have every game left is either a home game or a road game that they could win, other than maybe the Providence road game.
Right, and that goes to the point of their biggest weakness right now. Well, I'd like to see more meat on their win schedule, more wins against the field in an impressive fashion. But that's getting picky. If they can get a record that is significantly above 500. Combined with what they've done, December will be an ancient memory. People will say, well, they will definitively be saying Kalkenbrenner was hurt. We'll give him a pass. And don't be surprised if, because of their high net and the injury, that Creighton will actually get a seed line or two higher than their actual resume indicates.
Joby, you got him in the field today?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly right. I was one of the last ones, probably nationwide, to be very honest, to have them in the field. They are in the field. They're not just in the field for me, but they're actually outside the first four now.
Well, just an observation with McDermott. Did he take his mid-February to early March stretch in December instead of when he normally does?
Well, we'll find out when they play the Musketeers this weekend. And then Johnny's
midweek. Find out in March.
These are the games that he would typically have lost in the
Yeah, because like your typical McDermott team, like by February 1st, they're ranked in the top 10. And then by the end of February, they're on the bubble.
The two key games in the conference, I think, this week, both involve Sleek Xavier Musketeers at UConn Wednesday night, at Creighton on Saturday. But let's keep rolling things along.
I'm going to throw one more key game before we move on. Watch the Providence and Villanova game right here. If Providence wants to stay in the hunt for first place, they're going to need a road win right here, because Marquette and Xavier have already won at Nova.
Yeah, that game was supposed to be in the Wachovia Center, but now there might be an issue with the parking
It is going to stay at the Wachovia Center. It's a noon gate tip-off game on Sunday, with the Eagles game scheduled for 3 p.m. right across the street.
For those Eagles fans. I mean, you know, with everybody attending, you know, the Villanova
problem. Yeah. They're concerned about
the link with the tailgating and all that. Full.
No, like they're going to have a viewing party at the football stadium for the basketball.
Okay. Well, they could, because it'll be over before the football game starts. But let's go to the Pac-12, a conference that I know Dorman and Tytel both want to discuss this week. Dorman, let me start with you. You are an Arizona alum. You got your team did what they had to do with a pair of wins, including beating the red hot UCLA Bruins this week.
Yes, they knocked off the UCLA Bruins, who are red hot. And they did it differently this time. They were doing it on the defensive end. We've seen Arizona. They've been able to run up and down with you. They can beat you 80-75. They got athletes all over the place. But on Saturday against the Bruins, it was the defense and the physicality that took over. Omar Bala was a man down underneath. He was getting all the boards and he was really playing strong. Tubalis was great. They still need, the problem was at the end of the game, if you saw it, the turnovers did not stop. They almost gave the game away. The guard play has got to get better. They got to learn how to hold the ball and be able to take air out of the ball and take possessions, because Arizona was so weak with the ball down the stretch. But I like the way they were playing. I like the intensity was back and McHale was rocking.
Right. And the team that had a very interesting week, Joby, was USC, who, yes, they lost at Arizona, but they bounced back with an Arizona
play
State.
The Arizona schools.
But, I mean, but you know, get the win over Arizona State, which I know Titel and Dorman also enjoyed. But
And they got a hand to him by Arizona, but I think that's more, as pointed out by Dorman just now, Arizona's good. I think Arizona's the class of the Pac-12, even ahead of UCLA, as proven by this weekend. USC, what I wanted to highlight with USC is USC might be that team that we said, who is going to be a team that makes a run that, you know, we weren't really talking about, all of a sudden is in the field, you know, late. You know, we were mentioning Oregon in that breath. I don't think it's Oregon. I think it's this USC team. And the win over Arizona State's huge. While I still have ASU bouncing around in the field, I could easily be convinced that they shouldn't be. And USC, actually, I'm looking down, and they are my last team in right now. And you know that I'm no Pac-12 lover. And the fact is, the Auburn win is looking better and better and better. And so all of a sudden, their resume is, they're starting to develop a resume. And the Pac-12 has just enough, as evidenced by that Utah and Colorado and Washington win, just enough of, NIT, okay, to where if they can take care of business, ride that Auburn win, don't have any more stupid losses, Florida Gulf Coast. And all of a sudden, I think the Trojans will be dancing, maybe first four, but dancing come March.
Well, that was a heck of a game they played at UCLA back at the beginning of January. They play again this week, and this time it's going to be at USC. Mm-hmm. They win this game, it's only a home game, Griggs, it, you know, this I think,
yeah,
I'm with
you,
I mean, USC,
you,
being
you
in.
Get some, even I give credit to teams for beating protected seeds at home. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that would be a good one, but I think they need the next three, all of which are at home.
So they're in second place. Interestingly enough, Titel, is Utah. I don't know if that team is for real, though, or not, other than the fact that they beat your Arizona team in one game.
By 15, I believe. They swept the Washington schools at home last week to finally get some momentum after losing three in a row. As you see, one game behind the Bruins in the loss column at the top of the standings. They have five in a row against teams outside the top 50, which means they better pile up some wins while they still can. Coach Craig Smith, amazing. 11-20 last year in his first year in Salt Lake City. It's already 14-7 this year. You might only need one more big-time upset to get his team inside the bubble. Right now, I have them as a 17 seed just outside. But 7-footer Brandon Carlson, he missed the UCLA game a couple weeks ago. Since coming back in the three games since then, 25 points, 8 boards, 3 blocks a game. And as a 7-footer, he's 7 of 11 from three-point land.
Stalika, here's the upcoming schedule for the Pac-12. There is only one game we are circling, correct? It's coming up Wednesday night.
The Chicago State.
Yep, that's a Chicago State on a winning streak coming to Stanford right here.
Just won in Myrtle Beach in Coastal Carolina tonight. Wednesday night, they'll be in Stanford. That's the road. That's the life of an independent there for you. Now, UCLA, USC, obviously the big game. The Arizona schools will be at the Washington schools.
Yeah,
also.
Sort of a bubblicious game, that Utah at Oregon game.
Sort of like two, as in two teams that are
outside
the bubble
trying to get into it. Yeah.
I think Oregon, Utah needs it more than Oregon, because I don't know that Oregon can get there short of a very big run at this point. But let's go to the ACC.
I guess we
have to, and we're coming right off of Joby, right off of Virginia Tech just this evening with the 3-point home win over Duke. 2-7 now for the Hokies. It still isn't good enough, but
no,
that was so awful at the start of the.
But here's the thing, is, you know, they went 5 weeks without a win, 5 weeks. But here's the thing about Virginia Tech, and I'm not saying that, oh, you know, they're in the field, but they are in the NIT field right now. And they have the ability to, this team, I saw it against Virginia. This team has the opportunity and the chance to go upward, the win over Duke being a very key launching pad, but they have a reason for this. Hunter Couture has been out during, he has had arm problems and has been out during this entire time. They give Virginia a little bit of a scare with Couture, and then they go and they play Duke at home and they take care of business with Couture just shooting lights out and getting the final steal. If you watch the game, the final play of the game, Duke had a chance to tie and Couture made the steal. Hunter Couture was the hero of the ACC tournament last year. He is a key factor for the Hokies. Yes, for the Hokies to be talking about getting back to where they were in November, which was in the field, they need to beat a Virginia at home. They need to do a lot of heavy lifting. Yeah, you know, but they'll get their opportunities because there are a lot of teams in the ACC like them who are barely in or barely out. You have to beat those teams. Go out. They've already lost to Wake. They've already lost to NC State. You know, they need to go out and Joey, they need to beat those teams. They have the chance. They have the ability. Watch out for the Hokies. Don't bury them quite yet is okay. Because they can get to 500 in the conference.
Let me respond to that, and let me do so by chat. Can you pull up Duke on the other side?
Okay.
One of my biggest gripes about Duke is that they are simply not hard to beat when you are at home and they are not. Their only road win was Boston College by a point in a game where, quite frankly, BC totally blew it. This is not a good team on the road, and you don't deserve a whole lot of credit for beating a team at home that can't win on the road. I'm not impressed with Virginia Tech. I was expecting them to win coming into the day. Duke can win on the road.
This is the freshmen for Duke are growing up, though. You know, Pollard is – they're a different team than a lot of those losses that, you know, came early in the season. The problem for Duke on the lack of road wins, they didn't play road wins out of conference. Filipowski – is a lottery pick, and he showed it tonight. This is a good Duke team.
NC State just blew them out.
I think they're about a six seed.
Okay.
If you beat a six seed at home, that's a good launching pad.
They lost by about 30.
First of all, we got to keep things moving here. Second of all, I just want to throw out a Duke's defense. Neutral court wins over Xavier at Iowa are a pair of very nice wins that were not home wins. So they've done something away from home, just not true road games.
If they go to Georgia Tech and don't win, they might not win another one.
Dorman, the Pitt Panthers. This is a team that a lot of people had in the field for quite a while this year. Even though they went 1-1 this week, the win was only over Louisville. And a pretty bad home loss to Florida State over the weekend.
Slip sliding away. I think Pitt's season is going to be in the wrong direction. I agree they had some nice wins and they were doing some good things early. The North Carolina game stands out to me. They won in Syracuse. They even beat NC State in NC State, I believe. But they just didn't look the part on Saturday. And Florida State came into their building and really blew them out. The 7-point score really wasn't indicative. They were just manhandled the whole way. They got a rough stretch coming here. Wake Forest, they would have to beat at home. And you got Miami and North Carolina. Those are tough games. You need to win one of them. Miami's at home to even get back on the bubble. Right now, I have them out.
Right. And Tytel, I know there's another team that I know that Griggs does not like. Again, does have at least a quality, not a neutral court win. North Carolina Tar Heels, a home win over NC State this week, too.
I mean, they get a road win over Louisville. You got to give them credit for that, Chad.
I got to look way down the bottom of their profile to find that one. I'm glad
you put it on the screen. They bounced back from the loss at UVA a couple weeks ago, 3 straight wins. They're now tied with 4 other teams for 3rd place in the conference. I have them as an 8 seed. Nice 11-point home win over NC State on Saturday. Bad news, nasty-looking injury when Leaky Black was ejected for knocking Terquavion Smith to the floor. Good news, Smith has already been released from the hospital, and he's day-to-day. Amazing comeback story. The Heels head to Syracuse Tuesday, then they get the rest of the month off, which is a nice break. And a quick shout out to senior forward Armando Bacot for breaking not one, but two school records last weekend. Most double-doubles in school history and most rebounds in school history.
Yeah, just a quick thought. If North Carolina and Duke win on the road against each other, I'm calling BS.
I got to say, I got to give a little bit of a shout out to the entire ACC here. It is very rare that we see power conference teams play road games against quad four teams. And both ACC teams did this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to applaud that myself. Yes.
Let's see here. Salika, you know, we got a lot of games coming up. What are you circling here? I think you're on this. You're on a Florida State bandwagon now. Suddenly, Salika, is that right?
Florida State has quietly crept to a 5-4 in the ACC right here. And look who they're going to be hosting this week. They're going to be hosting Miami and they're going to be hosting Clemson. Those are not losses that either team can really afford to take right here. I mean, it's too late, I think, for Florida State to be at large, but they are going to do a lot of damage before this season is over.
I agree with you. This could be a dangerous team. This could be a dangerous team in the ACC tournament as well if they could find a way to put things together. It's a team that we expect a lot more out of.
Yeah, if they can avoid, like, if they can get to the round before the quarterfinals, because the ACC is one of those crazy ladder formats, I think they're going to ruin some people's day.
Let's go to a pair of conferences that had major upsets this week. Let's start in the American title. You've got some Philly ties here, and those Temple Owls went to Houston and did something absolutely amazing on Sunday.
It's the biggest sports story in Philadelphia, Chad. This team last month lost by 20 points. They lost at home to Maryland Eastern Shore. And then they come out Sunday afternoon while everybody's watching football. One of the most stunning wins of any team this year, the one-point upset of Houston at Houston. I didn't think it was possible for anybody to beat the Cougars while shooting 14 of 45 from the field. Good news, 20 of 22 from the free throw line helped a lot. I have them as about a 22 seed right now. They host South Florida on Wednesday and then head to UCF Saturday. Ironically, the biggest winner as a result of that upset, Rutgers, because the Scarlet Knights 6-point loss to the Owls back in November at Mohegan Sun is looking a lot better.
It's a lot better.
Yes. I also point out right now that if Memphis does not get a game winning three, Temple would be at top of the conference at 7-1.
Wow.
Great.
That's how crazy things are starting to look in the American.
Yes. And Salika, let me stick with you with that Memphis team here. They beat Wichita State and win at Cincinnati this week. So they are on pace probably for that second bid now, if we could have a second bid there.
We knew weird things were happening as soon as fans in the stands started tell this story. After a this is Bearcat shot right there.
That
may or may not have been related to another football game going on, but by the same token, there were not that many fans in the stands to begin with, just because we had an unexpected snow day here in Cincinnati.
This is hold a beautiful on a story.
Hold yes. on a second, Salika, tell the whole story here for those who don't know.
Okay, so first of all, we had a bit of an unexpected snow day here in Cincinnati, so we had maybe half the normal crowd that you would get at a Bearcats game. So about midway or late in the second half, there was an unexpected cheer during one of the Bearcats missing a shot from the field, and we find out that was Jamar Chase's touchdown to put the Bengals ahead for good, 7-0 early in the game.
Yeah, so if you were only watching the basketball game, which I was, you were quite confused as to why the crowd was that ecstatic over a missed shot in a crucial moment.
Okay, well, let's go one last point here in the conference, Dorman. UCF, who was another team we were all looking at, completely shot themselves in the foot on Saturday, did they not?
In the face.
Yeah, they took themselves right out of the running. I think they're well outside. They're going to have to go on an incredible run to even get back in the mix here. I thought they were doing well. I thought Dawkins had this going in the right direction, but absolutely awful weekend.
Yeah, they're hosting Houston Wednesday night. You win that game. And then they host Cincinnati. Houston's going to be hosting Cincinnati on Saturday. UCF will be hosting Temple on Saturday. And Memphis, let's see, they are hosting SMU and then at Tulsa.
Yeah.
Let's keep things rolling out along here. We're running low on time. And go to the other conference with the major upset. As the Gonzaga Bulldogs, after playing with fire all for three or four games in a row, suddenly finally do lose, and they lose at home. Tytel, Loyola Marymount knocks them off. Loyola Marymount.
I thought that we already had the upset of the year before Temple beat Houston. Unbelievable 1-point win at the Zags on Thursday night. A couple stats. The Lions held the Zags to 4 of 14 behind the arc and blocked 7 of their shots, snapped Gonzaga's 76-game home winning streak, 8th longest in the history of the sport. First win over Mark Few after losing 25 to him in a row. And they now have 4 winnable games in a row, including a rematch with a BYU team who they already beat by 5 points earlier this month. And several top 100 wins on the resume. Neutral overtime win, neutral site overtime win over Wake, 12-point home win over Nevada. I have them as a 30 seed right now, but like there's a path.
Is there a path? I would like to think so, but there's one loss, that loss at Pacific. Oh, man, if they just didn't have that.
Or the home loss over to UC Riverside. But I think, Joby, that the team that now undefeated, first place, very impressive what they did to a pretty good Santa Clara team over the weekend also, who they've now swept on the season.
Yeah.
St. Mary's Gales.
We talked about Santa Clara extensively last week because Rocco was at the Santa Clara game. And the fact of the matter is, and rightfully so, because Santa Clara has had a decent season. St. Mary's said, forget that. Get out of my way. I am going to take over. And St. Mary's now, St. Mary's is one of those teams, losses to Washington, Colorado State. How in the world is their, and you know, how in the world is their net where it is? It's why I think something's weird with the Western teams in the net. We'll get to it in the next conference, where I think a lot of their nets are just total bogus. But the fact of the matter is, they have a nice set of wins. That San Diego State win out of conference is a very solid win. I look forward to the 2 Gonzaga matchups. I think St. Mary's is going to be able to grab one of them, especially if the Zags continue to lose the Loyola Marymount play and only beat Pacific by 9. Don't forget that.
Yeah, Joby, let me explain the net ranking a little bit. If you look at the strength of record, it's 40, and that is probably a little bit too low. But what that tells you is that when you're playing Oral Roberts and you're playing North Texas and you're playing teams that win a lot of games and you beat them handily, which St. Mary's has done, then the efficiency and the more importantly, the adjusted efficiency ratings in the net go through the roof.
But their overall strength of schedule is not that great.
It's not, but their adjusted efficiency
is. And so I just say, you know what?
Like, look at it. It's 6th. That's where that's coming
from. The best way to say it is, it's not St. Mary's fault. But I do say New Mexico, you don't get credit for a top 10 win. You get credit for maybe a tier 1, not a top 10 win. That's BS. And then it piles on itself. You know, then New Mexico gets bloated, and then that leads to the entire Mountain West.
They've gamed the net.
The whole Mountain West is bogus.
Okay, we do have to move along here.
But I love this St. Mary's team. Like, Gonzaga had been playing with fire. St. Mary's.
They're not a 2 seed. That's my point.
This week, St. Mary's going to be at BYU. Gonzaga's going to be at Portland. But let's jump over to that Mountain West conference, that last conference out west here, where Dorman, let me start with you. San Diego State bounces back, picks up a pair of road wins at Colorado State and at Air Force this week. Now 6-1 in first place in the league.
Yeah, I was surprised by the loss. That kind of caught me off, but they just I chalk it up to just not being mentally there one night. I still think they're the class of this conference. San Diego State, I think, will take care of business. The mix at 2, 3, and 4 is where it really gets crazy. There was an unbelievable game Friday night. Yes. Boise went to the pit and played New Mexico in overtime, and New Mexico ran a great out-of-bounds play with 2 seconds to go to beat them. It was a great basketball game. Boise State well in the field today for me.
Okay, and that's an interesting team. I want to spend a minute on here. Joe, I actually could get your thoughts on here, bring you right back in on Boise State, because Boise, you have a very bad loss there at home to South Dakota State, and they have a ton of Tier 2A wins. I've said before, they lead the nation in Tier 2A wins, but I don't think they've beaten anybody that's in the field right now.
Now, you could argue Nevada right on the edge. But the especially Nevada pulls off the upset.
And if you argue that Nevada is not in the field, they have four losses to teams not in the field and no loss over anybody in the field. Does that make
right, exactly. in? So Boise State right now, Boise State by mere inertia is there. But it's here's the issue. All of a sudden, you're looking, oh, you know, don't worry. You lost to Nevada. You lost to Nevada. That's only a tier one loss. Bull corn. That is a tier two loss. That is a tier two loss. Don't tell me that, oh, somehow that loss is a thousand times better than losing to Wisconsin. That's silly. And so as such, this give the Mountain West credit. They did it because their top five teams are all in the net, like 32 or better. And UNLV is, if they get on a little bit of a roll, they can get back to the top 75, which you lose at the Mac Center is a tier one loss. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's silly. The fact of the matter is Boise, they very well might make it. I think one of these Mountain West teams on the edge, whether it be Nevada, Boise, Utah State, one of them is going to be that third team in, and they will promptly get drilled.
He mentioned Utah State, Tytel, and
you're
and
that's ignoring their win over San Jose State.
We're ignoring you right now, Griggs. Tytel, Utah State, very similar though. Maybe even worse though, because there's two tier four losses instead of 1 year.
Yeah, 3 points each, one possession losses. Not the most impressive week or resume. Pair of home wins over UNLV and the aforementioned San Jose State by a combined 5 points. This is the quietest four-loss team in the nation. They're one game behind the Aztecs, which means their road trip to San Diego State this Wednesday is now a ginormous game. Huge. And even if they can't pull off the upset, they face them again at home in 2 weeks after that. Coach Ryan Odom's team has been living by the three, 42% behind the arc, number one in the nation. Every team has one or two losses each year that they regret, but this team's three-point home loss to Weber State last month after blowing an 18-point first-half lead, that might be the reason they end up just outside the bubble.
Well, and I gotta say, it's
also a trap game to Fresno.
It is a Beehive Conference game, battle for the old Oaker bucket.
Yes,
so,
there it is.
You may want to discount those rivalry games. I'll give Utah State a little little love there for that. But let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule here. We already mentioned some of those games, New Mexico at Nevada going on as we record this, Utah State, San Diego State game. We also got, I guess those are the big ones for this week, aren't they? Yeah. We do have two.
I'm
going
to throw in that trap game for Utah State where they go to Fresno on Saturday. That's going to be sandwiched in between San Diego State and New Mexico. So no margin for error for the Aggies right now.
We have two other teams that we do want to discuss. We've been discussing them for a few weeks ago. They're both in the top 25. I'll just pull up both their profiles here instead of bring up their conference pages. They are College of Charleston and Florida Atlantic, a pair of top 25 teams, Griggs, here. Charleston now at 18 in both polls. Florida Atlantic 21 in the AP, 24 in the coaches poll. Both with only one loss. I keep liking the team on the right here, Florida Atlantic, better than the team on the left, although the pollsters don't agree with me.
I do agree with you. I didn't for a while, but I kind of do now. I think Charleston's toughest remaining game, even though it's a home game, might be the one this weekend against Hofstra. When you look at Florida Atlantic, UAB's been disappointing, but it's still hard to win there. Charlotte, hard to win there. Like they could actually drop a game or two between now and the end, but even if they do, as long as they're an outright first place team that doesn't finish the regular season with more than three losses, I think they go in on the first ballot. I think Charleston wins out just because they essentially have nothing but bye games remaining, even the games that aren't actually at home.
Yeah, and the game at Drexel at Delaware also could be a bit of a challenge, but very small challenges, I would argue. But Tytel, you being the selection committee guessing expert here, again, I think we've asked this question a few times here. How much room margin of error do either one of these teams have?
Slim. If Charleston loses a game, it's going to be to a team outside the top 100, whether it's in the regular season or the conference tourney. If they win out and go 30-1 and then stub their toe and are 30-2, I think they're safely in.
Yeah.
They have one or two more, not sure. At least FAU, if they lose on the road to a top 100 team, which they have two of to start February, bigger room for error, I think.
Two to start February at Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, Middle Tennessee also playing well right now.
And Rice has been playing well. That could be a higher rated Rice team by the time you get there in March as well. So there's a
Rice beat North Texas, who we all and that was a bad game for Florida Atlantic, by the way, because they needed with their wins already in the bag over North Texas, they really needed North Texas to maintain a high, impressive look. The losses to North Texas to Rice is a hit on the Florida Atlantic resume, but I think everybody's right. They have room for error to lose probably even two regular season games, as long as it's the sort of games like, Charlotte, et cetera.
Yeah. And this is the team that you hinted at earlier. Did where Florida getting better is helping Florida Atlantic, because Florida Atlantic beat them.
And what a story for the Owls. Charleston has had some basketball history. They've had some really good teams. They've actually gotten into the rankings and won some NCAA tournament games. I don't think Florida Atlantic has ever been good at all. So what a story to see them on the national stage.
Florida Atlantic won the A-Sun tournament when they're in 0-2 for their only NCAA tournament appearance. They promptly lost their first game. There is no basketball history in Florida Atlantic outside of one miracle run through a conference tournament in 0-2. Not miracle.
And this was the A-Sun before Liberty and before Dunk City really made the A-Sun a reasonable upset expectation tournament.
It was shortly after it ceased to be the Transatlantic and changed its name to the Atlantic Sun. All right. So
that's it for all the teams here. We want to go to final thoughts now. And Tytel, since you want to screen share, I'm going to start with you here. And you asked me to pick out the picture for today. So we're bringing up our favorite team here, spoken in true South Philly accent, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well done. It's important to keep the boss happy. And so we have to ask Chad for a prediction for this weekend. I heard that Christian McCaffrey has a calf contusion. Are you feeling lucky, Chad?
I think it's going to be a good game. I'm going to take the Eagles, Iggles, the Eagles. I'll take them by field goal. I think it's a good close game. I think we go to the Super Bowl to play Stalika's Bengals.
That would be awesome.
All right, let's go. Keep going through the final thoughts here. Stalika.
I was going to start mentioning how much red and orange might actually be in the building for Creighton and Xavier on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But I actually want to go to the SEC Big 12 challenge, because we already mentioned the Tennessee-Texas matchup with Rick Barnes, but don't forget the Keontae Johnson angle, where Florida is actually going to be going to Kansas State right here. This is actually going to be a game of significance for both teams, maybe a little more so for Florida, just because they could really use a significant road win right here. But again, amazing to see Johnson's continued recovery and stardom for the Wildcats and what's been an unexpectedly successful season for them.
Absolutely. Dorman.
I was on the same topic, Stalika, the Big 12 and the SEC showdown. I just think it's a great move by these coaches and these athletic conference commissioners. It's great out-of-conference basketball. It's a big weekend. They got football over with. Everyone's watching basketball. Put on these big-time matchups. I think it's great. I think the kids love it. I think the schools love it. TV obviously loves it. It's great for the fans. More of these conferences should be doing this in February and January.
Yeah. How about another, just to ask you a question slash share a thought. What if they did it similar to the way they did the old Busters? They didn't announce the matchups until 2 or 3 weeks out, because we would not have these matchups. Yeah. Like, I this is it. Not what it would be.
There's still a lot of good matchups.
There's some good matchups.
Oh, no, there's some good games. There absolutely are.
And I still think that this slate this year, even with these matchups, is probably better than most years we've seen in this challenge. But you're right, it could be even better.
Yeah.
Joby.
Well, I debated whether to mention this today or Thursday, because it's almost more of a bracket-oriented thing, but I thought I'd go ahead and mention it. So, if you are wanting to know where your team is, if you want to have an idea, look at what John Tytel posts. Look at what the J&G says. But, the Bible is where people are going to go. is the bracket matrix. And there's a good reason for that. Last year, the bracket matrix composite was actually near the top of the overall, you know, predictions of the bracket. But I'm noticing something this year. Don't be too enamored right now, especially with the bracket matrix, because I am noticing an awful lag with it. Right now, the picks don't get updated as quickly. It's not like things are coming in daily. So I first noticed that when UConn was in the midst of their awful stretch of five-game losing streak, but yet they were still a two seed because people, it built on itself. So it's, well, everybody else has them as a two. I better keep them as a two. It was insanity of how slow it took UConn, who's still the second best four on bracket matrix. That's ridiculous. TC ahead of TCU, that and Marquette, that and Baylor. What? but feel free, as you look at that, know what you're looking at. Look at Tytel's picks. Look at the J&G. Right now, those are better than what maybe at the end of the year, the bracket matrix will be extremely valuable as all those picks are daily updated, daily from the various experts across the country. But for now, I have to give that plug for this website that does such a good job of giving up to date what's happening every day, what's happening with the games every day. I can't say that there's any other place that could provide such extensive coverage on a daily basis as Hoops HD.
I got to echo that. I mean, I got to thank everybody out there that is actually coming into our website. We have been blowing our numbers through the roof off of prior years this year already. We still got another week left in January. This has already been our best January of all time. So thanks to everybody who's been following the website and following us. And Griggs, you want to finish the show off?
Yeah, I noticed yesterday, speaking of the bracket matrix, somebody had Albany on the sixth line. I don't know how that happened. Anyway, that was my mistake. Absolutely. In building the bracket, I confused the regional for the team, but hopefully it didn't throw things too far out of whack. A second quick thought, Duke and North Carolina can't win on the road. North Carolina hasn't lost to anybody outside the bubble on the road. Duke has... And well, Duke did today, and they almost did against Boston College. And my third final thought is it is sort of under the radar-ish. We've got Florida Atlantic and Charleston, normal under the radar teams that have cracked the top 25. And we have a third, Kent State, knocking on the door, checking in at 29 today in the AP poll. I don't think we've ever had three regular under the radar teams in the Hoops HD report. So we might be making history yet again before the end of the season.
We
three teams Kent, at the same time.
If Kent State can, I thought you were going to give a shout out to Seattle that got one vote in the coaches poll, but
maybe not.
But I guess on that note, I do want to take a chance again.
Yeah, who's the West Coast voter? Is it Seattle's coach?
but thank everyone for joining us on behalf of David Dorman and John Tytel up here, Joby Fortson below me, John Slica and David Griggs to his sides. I'm Chad Sherwood. We'll be back again Wednesday with Under the Radar, Thursday with Bracket Rundown. Talk to you again real soon.